previously on Getting the Mecha.
Reen still remains that character despite the whole domino effect thing that I'm talking about, that slashes what is in his way. If something stands there, he will slash it with those blue flames no matter what. And that's where I think Aeon Nexus really tries. It tries to make those relationships really convincing and just bulks them up with loads of character.
This is Getting the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it.
Welcome back to Getting the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode, we are looking at the Terror of the Kraken arc of Aeon Exorcist. This is an arc which I could have done, but I actually decided to ignore, or at least now do it for a later time. The reason for it is because it's quite short, and I didn't think back then there'll be so much to talk about, but here we are today. Maybe that's telling that I'm trying to get something out, but also I think there is, just to be a bit more serious, I think there is value in shorter arcs, and the Terror of the Kraken arc upon rereading, I noticed quite a few things that I didn't really think about before, and I really just thought of it as almost a filler arc of some kind. But when you really think about it, this is a really great transition, and that transition really is one which I want to discuss today. If you do enjoy the show, it would be lovely if you did me a favor and left a review on Apple Podcasts. If you go into iTunes, then you can leave a review, and it's really helpful only because it allows other people to find the show, and it's also useful because it gives me feedback on what to improve on and those sorts of things. So it would be really lovely if you did leave a review. It's obviously not required or mandatory, but it would help me out a ton. There isn't really much else to say for this intro, so let's just hop into the episode, really. That is episode 66 of Getting the Mecha. A look into Aeon Exorcist, or Blue Exorcist, Terror of the Kraken arc. As always on Getting the Mecha, I like to give you my alerts for the episode in case there are spoilers which are flying around. And in today's episode, there will be minor or light spoilers for the arc. The reason why I say this is there isn't much to talk about on the surface level in regards to content, and so sure, I might give away the main basis of the plot for this arc, but that's because it's 3 chapters, and this episode would be insanely vague if I was to speak only about the very surface, which I am trying to do, but I can only say so much, and so I guess there are spoilers, but it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Even if you haven't read this far into Aeon Exorcist, this is actually the third arc into the manga, so it's the in-between in regards to episodes between the Festival Arc episode, which I did way long ago, and the Kyoto Impure King arc, which I did even longer before that. That was one of the first episodes of the pod, to be honest. So this is a weird in-between arc, and hence you can listen to this even if you haven't read Aeon Exorcist. It's really just a short bit of value in regards to how transitions work and some smaller things like that, but the smaller things are still important, and that's something which we'll find out in this episode. It's been quite a while since we've done one of these plot summaries, especially with music, but the fact that we are in an arc analysis sort of mode, and we are talking about Aeon Exorcist, it's only proper to do it the proper Getting the Mecha way, and so I present to you a plot summary which I haven't done in what feels like 10 episodes or so. I'm not really sure about that. But without further ado, here is a plot summary for the Terror of the Kraken arc. The Terror of the Kraken arc is a 3-chapter arc which spans from chapters 35 to 37 and follows on after the events of the Kyoto Saga, or the Kyoto Impure King arc. This arc saw the success of our X-Fires in taking down the Impure King, and so they are coming back from Kyoto. On the way back from the location, the True Cross forces stop at a beach known as Atami Sunrise Beach in order to stop another threat, which is a very deadly Kraken. As we manage to progress, Rin makes a rather reckless move against the Kraken, and as a result gets both Yukio and Shimi into a bit of trouble on the mission, as they eventually find themselves stuck in a subterranean cave beneath the island. And so, despite its length, the Terror of the Kraken arc is a short story which attempts to explore and continue this relationship which has been building up for us between the Okumura brothers. There isn't much to say, as I said, but this arc works really hard to give us something to take forward into the narrative and does a good job of transitioning between two other pretty big arcs within Aono Exorcist. Two of the biggest arcs so far is pretty much sandwiched in between. Okay, the festival arc maybe not, as it's a prelude to a much bigger arc, but even so, it is sandwiched between two very important and valuable arcs, but that isn't to say that there isn't value within this one, even though it's sandwiched. The arc, unlike the Kyoto and Pure King arc, from my perspective, does really well as it manages to get us back into the flow of the sort of manga in general. And I think my sort of issue with the Kyoto and Pure King arc, and something which I did manage to raise back in that episode, even though I don't expect anyone to listen to that because it sounds really bad and it's all the way back at the beginning of the podcast, really. But the thing that I kind of dislike about it to a degree is just how crowded it is and how separate it almost feels to the rest of the manga, because we really have to adapt to an entire sort of new way of thinking with all these new characters and new concepts which we weren't really familiar with. And I don't think that it's the introduction of them that's bad, but the role that they play makes it feel very daunting for anyone who's even been reading this consistently and properly for a while. And then you hit the Kyoto and Pure King arc, or at least for me, I was just a bit confused and I can't really take it all in. And what does really good within the Terror of the Kraken arc is the fact that it manages to bring it back to what it felt like initially. And obviously I have hindsight and I know that things do reset quite well. I think the arcs going onwards do resemble this thing which doesn't represent the sort of crowded nature of the Kyoto and Pure King arc and such, but it allows us to ease into the following arc quite nicely. And there are some really good signs for just showing this transition, like how they're literally in Kyoto in the first chapter of the arc, and they're just departing from the scene there and move into another place. It just has a good amount of flow to it, as opposed to these sort of blocks or divides between the arcs, which really, I don't want to say uses arc structure to its maximum degree, but it takes it, I think, a bit too literally. Arcs, despite being separate, can equally work together, and the Terror of the Kraken arc manages to prove that. Another really good thing it does is that it manages to re-centralize the narrative back into this personal dilemma between Yukio and Rin. It feels very like I expected it, or it just feels back to where it usually was. This personal clash manages to continue, and although it's an argument that concerns a Kraken initially, it does evolve and escalate into some bigger things which we should take into account, and were kind of, I don't want to say side lines within Kyoto and Pure King, but at least they didn't necessarily take the forefront. But the personal dilemma is really what underpins a lot of Aono Exorcist. This dynamic between brothers really influences how we get through these arcs, and how Rin really manages to find who he is, and how Yukio manages to find who he is as well and find his place within that. This personal dilemma is one which is about one boy who likes to push his limits and really try different things and even go beyond the limitations which he's given just because he has unstable circumstances and has been cursed with this sword and all of the rest of it. And then there's Yukio, who, yes, we are unsure as to his compatibility with the powers of Satan, but he still has his own personal issues about being restrictive in regards to Rin, mostly because he fears the power and he fears the things that will come with it and the consequences within the sort of exorcist world. And he's also just generally quite wary of a person, and so having to work around that is a big theme within all of Aono Exorcist, but it comes to the fore once again in the Terror of the Kraken arc. I also feel like, and this might even sound a bit contradictory because of the name, but I feel like the Kraken is only a vehicle to further discussion in regards to the personal dilemma. It's not to say that I dislike the Kraken, but it is very Kraken-y. It's yes, it's alive, but there's obviously no dialogue because it's a Kraken, and it kind of just serves as an antagonist to be there. And it's not really a bad thing. I'm not saying it in the context that there wasn't an expectation that was built up for it to be this very important and antagonistic force, but that isn't also to say that I love it so much. But the point is, really, the Kraken isn't really a big deal, and what is more importance is how it builds or allows more conversation and events to happen that aren't actually it itself. So the meeting, or at least conversation, between Shimi, Irene, and Yukio within the cave is probably a lot more relevant than the Kraken itself. So it really spurs on more events and gives way for more necessary, you can call it, or at least more things which give us more information about these characters and how they're feeling at this point in time, rather than actually caring too much about the Kraken itself and what the Kraken has to bring to the arc as an antagonist. A really important lesson which comes from this Kraken deal, or whatever you really want to call it, is how Yukio really has to try and learn to detach the trauma which comes with the flames of Rin, even though Rin isn't the person that caused this incident, but those flames and that idea of the flames holds trauma, so that really has to be accepted by Yukio because he still fears them and he still has some personal issues in that area. There are only so many things he can do to keep a Kunkur cap on Rin, and when we consider now that the stakes and the missions are only getting harder, keeping a cap on things really won't be productive for either of them, or even the entire team, or the XY team. And so this is something that needs to be addressed, and of course it's not necessarily solved in this arc. This is an ongoing dilemma, this is an ongoing issue, but I'm happy to at least acknowledge this part of the narrative, because it's something that will definitely need to be addressed moving forward, so it manages to plant a bit of a seed now. This is a bit of a short in-between point, but also there are a few panels within this arc which look and are quote-unquote unfinished. I haven't done much research into it, but from the copy I read, they are not shaded in and they're mostly sketches of the characters, and I don't think this is much of a bad thing. It is unfortunate, yes, that Kato couldn't finish these panels in enough time, but I think this is also, and yes, I'm going into a bit of an industry point, but it is a good reminder as to the industry is very stressed and it's very pushed on. It's very, let's just be to the point, I'm kind of avoiding it. It's really based on overwork, and so I don't think there's anyone really to blame here, and I don't think especially Kato is one to blame here, considering how the manga industry works and functions. It functions on very bad practices, similarly to the anime industry as well, and so I'm not really going to raise it as a big point, but it really shows the strenuous nature of these industries. I did want to point it out because it is still an important thing. It would be kind of false if I was to ignore it, as it is quite a crucial, or at least it's quite a big part of this few chapters. It's a relevant thing because it's not something we see very often on this manga. But anyway, back to the main stuff. This is going to kind of be more of our look into what this gives us insight to when it comes to manga, anime, and the media. And so my first thing on that really is that small arcs, or quote-unquote beach episodes, even though it's a manga, so it's not necessarily a beach episode, it's a few chapters or a beach arc, or whatever you feel comfortable calling it. I think there's a very good opportunity to give us insight into a few things, and we shouldn't necessarily pass these all, and I say all with a lot of emphasis, we shouldn't pass all of these up as say filler, as these sort of inter arcs, as I call them in my notes, they connect these larger arcs together. And so these can be very valuable for the mangas. They allow us to get really into the headspace to endure another arc. Endure maybe is a strong word, I mean more of get through and really have our thinking caps on before we get to the next arc. This arc, similarly to any other arc, especially within a battle shonen, has the responsibility of still manipulating our emotions. That is arguably one of the main functions of literature and of a text, and these smaller arcs don't function differently from that idea. Additionally, this influences our understanding of pace and speed as well. This is also an influence on our emotions. In the case of if we were to have two arcs like this back to back, there would be a much more varied emotional response in comparison to if we did have a transitionary arc between the two. And it's not to say that a transition arc is necessary or 100% needed for this manga or any manga, but it is very dependent on the effect of which the reader or the writer, sorry, or mangaka is trying to give off. And in this case, Kato is allowing us to ease into it, and she's able to feed us some themes that aren't too heavy, the themes that we're still very familiar with, but she still manages to sort of re-inoculate us with them before going into the festival arc and the arcs which come afterwards. Just to go back on that point, if we think about arcs which are back to back, the emotional response often, I think for me, is this very overwhelming response. It's an attempt to kind of keep us on our feet, and that causes the reader to feel sort of overwhelmed, but also quite challenged as well. We understand through structure alone the magnitude of this event as we plunge right into the next one. This is obviously case by case, but I'd say it's often the case with battle shonen. This is a bit of a tangent, and hopefully I don't get too far into it, but an example which I really enjoyed, or an example of me really enjoying the arcs being conjoined together within the case of a battle shonen, is okay that the arcs that come afterwards in Eho no Exorcist, that's a really good example. But I'd also say recently in One Piece, between the Water 7 and Enies Lobby arc, the two flow almost seamlessly into each other. They bleed right into each other because they're directly connected, and things only build up and become more tense because of it. There's no sort of let's slow down on this island and chill out. And that reminds me of another case within One Piece as well, where there's this point where for some reason Oda decides let's just go to this small island and meet the man with the afro in the chest, and they just have a chat for a few chapters, like one or two chapters, and then they leave again. And that's the thing which I love about transitions within manga, and Eho no Exorcist does this as well. It's also an ability to expand our understanding of the world, and you don't have to give some sort of massive information dump, if you want to call it that, or at least really just present a lot of information as to the world to us. Why not just show it to us instead in some short circumstances or instances? And Kato does this by expanding our knowledge of what is between Kyoto and the True Cross Academy, and in that case, that is this beach. So it's just a bit more knowledge as to what is out there, and that is also something which we'll get a bit more into within some of the further arcs as well. And it is for that reason which I think we should maybe ditch this idea of calling these transitions filler of some sort. And something I kind of did discuss on other episodes is this idea of space being under attack. Everything from visual space being seen as a waste of time to episode length and events occurring within an episode being a waste of time as well. And I'm not really defending filler, but I'm really trying trying to challenge how we use the term, as we can use the term quite often for, I don't want to say the wrong reasons, but we use it too widely to sort of dismiss things which probably shouldn't be dismissed. And in this case, this smaller arc, the Terror of the Kraken arc, shouldn't really be deemed as filler, as it equally has a job for the narrative. And when we look at it from this wider view, or at least from this helicopter view, we see that there are very important things that this arc is required to do, such as reset the narrative and kind of get us back into the flow of Aono Exorcist. This brings me to a bit of a final point, and that is that I think overarching story arcs, or the use of story arcs, is very important, but it also has its pros and cons. It's not a necessary thing needed for a narrative within the manga space, within the anime space, or in any other media space to really function. The thing about arcs is that they really are based on how the mangaka approaches it. There aren't any two same arcs. Sure, one can argue within the same manga that might be some which feel really similar, but at least in the case of between mangakas, there is no two same arc, because how one approaches it from length to structure, even though length is part of structure, the themes tackled, the transitions between them, and eventually when the manga finishes, we get to see this overarching structure and how everything seems to work together. The structure of one mangaka, when it comes to their approach to arc structure, will never be the same as another. Big back-to-back arcs can be rather detrimental to a degree, as I would say that it somewhat lacks authenticity sometimes, not in every case, but sometimes I'd say they lack authenticity only on the basis that there's minimal flow and transition to get through it, and it kind of feels like a very blocky way of introducing things into a narrative. There doesn't feel like there's this, and not every story abides to chronology per se, but there's really no sense of, I think the time is sort of undermined as we kind of just move from one thing right into another for the sake of moving on, as opposed to moving into it, we're moving onto it instead. Hopefully that makes a bit more sense. It feels a bit more harsh in that sense. Additionally, this back-to-back thing can be very good and can overwhelm us. Take my One Piece example just before. And so there is no one way to do it. It really depends on who is doing it and their intentions behind doing it. In the case of the Terror of the Kraken arc, this is really what creates the authenticity that the manga has and deserves. This authentic feel that we're going through and we're trying new things and we are going back to the school but not quite yet, and as a result we get to learn a bit more about the world, and I really do enjoy that. It's subtle and something which I didn't realize when I first read it. I read this about 2 years ago and I'm only talking about it now, but yeah, pretty much exactly 2 years ago or so, within the same month or the month before. So I know this arc quite well. I've known it for a long time, but I never really thought about it like this. I thought of it as sort of the mini arc, or just some chapters to get through, but I never really thought that this could be analyzed, because it can, and it can be analyzed in and of itself because of what it is and what its function is. It's a narrative connector of some sort to bring things together and regain the flow and pacing of this manga. We should definitely keep in the back of our heads the length of an arc, or the length of a piece of media or anything, does not provide insight into its value, and length does not equate to it being better. More content doesn't necessarily mean that it has more chances to be better, or it is better because it has more things to include, because value isn't something that can be quantified. And for the Terror of the Kraken arc, I think it shows exactly that a lot of value can come out of 3 chapters, and this value isn't the core type of value that you expect from Aono Exorcist. It's not information about the next big enemy or the happenings of the True Cross and all these juicier things, you can call it, or just juicy things, but it still gives us a view into these characters, and this view is important considering the arc which came before it. The Terror of the Kraken arc has its own function, unlike the other arcs, and does, for me, a very good job of creating a very smooth transition between the Kyoto Impure King arc and the Festival arc. With all of that said, that is the analysis done for this week. Let's go to the In The Moment segment. I know this was a bit of a shorter episode, and I kind of don't mind it this way. I do like doing shorter things, mostly because it's easier to edit, obviously, but also I think I stick more to the point than on some of my longer episodes. But anyway, let's get into the In The Moment segment and talk about something or some things which I've been watching this week. If you are new to the In The Moment segment, it's probably the most simple segment in anime, at least within the anime podcasting niche, and all I do is talk about what I've been watching or reading for a few minutes or so. But what I'm going to do is do it the way I did it, the old way. But the old way essentially is me just talking about a long list of things which I have been watching. The thing about it is that the reason why I'm doing this is because I don't really have the, not really brain power, but I don't really have the statistics to show that I've watched much this week or in the few weeks which I've been recording lately, because I've reached a phase where I'm kind of making more content than I am watching content. And it's not to say that, oh, I'm running out, because no, that's not really it. But I just don't really have much to talk about in terms of new things. So instead, let's just talk a bit about some of the various other things which I've been watching. I also did realize that it is the sort of start of the new season, and so there are quite a few other things which I'm watching as well. So I am watching Assault Lily Bouquet, which is an anime by Shaft, and so far it's okay, I would say. I can't really, if I was to be honest with you, I can't really talk about the narrative, because I don't say I don't know what it's about, but when most of your anime watching experience is you editing while watching anime, it is a bit hard sometimes to grasp the story unless it's like pretty simple or something you've kind of watched before, so you understand the basic gist of what's going on. But in the case of Assault Lily Bouquet, I can't actually tell you, if I'm completely honest, and this is a bad thing. But what I can tell you is that it is pretty well animated so far. I kind of expected that already, considering its direction and some of the staff, even though I'm not too sure on everyone that's on it yet. But it seems like a pretty decent production, and from what I'm seeing, it is going down relatively okay. And then we have two short films which I actually just remembered, and so I'm totally not using this to cover up that I'm barely watching anything this season. So we have two Chinese short films which came out recently, and these aren't particularly like listed on my anime list or something, but these are two very good films, and they're also probably by some of the, okay, I don't know the director for the second one which I'll be speaking about, but we have the director from Undetectable Box, which was also another amazing short film by 717 Studios, or I believe 717 Productions, hopefully I got that right, by Shuyu Lee, and this time we have False Memory, which has made one of my favorite art house films as of now, a beautiful set of techniques, and they really outdid themselves from Undetectable Box. If you thought Undetectable Box was good, it is, it's amazing, then check out False Memory as well, because I would say it fleshes itself out a bit more. It's a bit more, I don't say a bit more abstract, but at least the cinematography is definitely rethinking itself relative to Undetectable Box. It's just a really new way of thinking about it all, and I really damn enjoyed it. Definitely an amazing watch, and very inspirational as well. Kind of reminds me of my first experience with Yutaro Kubo's Crazy for It or 8 Past Midnight. Just a completely new experience that I wasn't used to. Every frame feels different and unique, but also it feels very authentic in how it's drawn, and I don't think there's any major compulsion depositing on any of it as well, so it just has a very authentic indie film look, but it feels more than just an indie film. This is a Chinese anime which you should watch, and it's about 18 minutes, so slightly shorter than your average anime episode, so something definitely to dive into. And also, it's free as well. It's on YouTube for everyone to watch, as well as Bilibili. It comes with English subtitles, so just get stuck in, because it's really worth it, basically. And then we have the second one, which I'm relatively unsure about the staff, and so I'm not going to try and mess that up. I'll, if I remember, put links in the show notes for credit and such so you can watch it. And that is Apocalypse Day. I do believe there are actually quite a lot of relatively notable animators on Apocalypse Day, so that is also something to watch out for. I can't remember any names. This segment today really is just me forgetting things and just not knowing enough. But Apocalypse Day is... False Memory came out a few weeks ago, whereas as of when this is being recorded, Apocalypse Day came out a few days ago, like a week ago, or even like 3-4 days ago. So I'm sorry to make the comparison, but I didn't enjoy it as much. However, it's still a fascinating film, and from the sort of visual perspective, it uses a lot of varying things. We have almost what feels like a Stickman animation at times, this side scrolling, even though we're not scrolling because that's gaming terminology, but the side profile combat, which takes place quite a decent amount of different aspect ratios. So we have the 2-3-5-1, all these amazing uses of different timings from threes for some combats, and it's very ambitious, basically. But it's very hard to put into words, so watch it, basically. Watch Apocalypse Day. And so, yeah, with that being said, that is a very terrible in-the-moment segment complete. Hopefully I do get a bit more back into the anime flow of things. I have been reading a lot of manhwa in the nights because it's very easy to read like that. But I think it would be very awkward if I was to spend a whole 10 minutes or 5 minutes just discussing the various plots of multiple, and when I say multiple, I mean like 5, 6, 7 borderline H manhwa. So no to that. But on that note, that is the in the moment segment over. Let's go to the closing thoughts segment. I don't really call it a segment, but let's go to closing thoughts and just summarize the Terror of the Kraken arc and my thoughts on it. The Terror of the Kraken arc is a short arc, but I would also say it's very valuable. It has the ability to give us a lot of information into, gives us a lot of insight into the personal dilemma which still continues between Rin and Yukio, and also manages to reintroduce us to it as well after an arc which I thought was rather crowded and kind of difficult to keep up with at times, since there were so many different things introduced to the extent where I kind of got lost in it all. And I don't dislike the Kyoto Impure King arc. Overall, I still think it's pretty solid, but the Terror of the Kraken arc really gives me faith that things are resetting and nature is healing. Sato manages to bring things back to a point where it's more digestible again, and I think that is a very important part of transition arcs, or at least material that gives us some sort of transition into other pieces. In the Terror of the Kraken arc, we are drip-fed a few ideas which will become a bit more prominent and into the forefront as we progress, and I'm sure of it, not only just because I've read ahead, but also because I can tell these are ideas which underpin all of Aeon Exorcis, and to forget them here would be a very missed opportunity. Overall, the Terror of the Kraken arc manages to prove that quantity does not equate to value, and I think this arc has a lot of value for the short time which it spends explaining itself and reintroducing us to ideas. Thank you for listening to Guess the Mecha. That has been episode 66. It has been a really fun episode, actually. If you could do me a favor, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, that would be very appreciated. It would help me out in regards to other people finding the show. I will hopefully see you next week. But I have been your host, Jamal, today, and this has been Guess the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows. 8-Bit's Title Screen by Joth, Difference by Chasers Gaming, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org, and Unpleasant Discovery by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org.